Welcome. This is Dee Nicholson on Zero Point Radio on the BBSRadio.com radio system for Saturday, April the 13th, 2013. Wow, welcome to spring. April Fool, you thought it was spring, ha ha ha. We've all been freezing. Today, people, we have no Christopher. Christopher is not with us today. And so consequently, I will be your host and general information benefactor today. And with me, I will be bringing on in a few minutes our friend Keto from up in the wilds to the west of Ottawa, west and north of Ottawa. And she's going to be sharing with us a lot of opinion and fact and speculation. And we girls are just going to have a lot of fun going all over the map because there's so much going on these days. It doesn't look like there's an awful lot going on because it's not like full of headlines and it's not like things are all new to us. These are things that have been coming on for a while. Things like Obama signing the what we fondly call the Monsanto Protection Act. A lot of people got flipped out about that in the last week or so because at the end of March he signed this genetic modification basic permission to Monsanto to run roughshod over our food supply, and essentially he put Monsanto above the law with signing this particular act and the particular clause that's in it. Now, a lot of people got upset, but I have since found out that this particular thing is a continuing resolution, a House continuing resolution, and that means it actually has a sunset clause. That means that is not a permanent thing. So while people are getting all upset about what is clearly not a permanent thing, you know, other things are going on that are permanent things. And one of them that I want to throw out to you for your consideration today has to do with our bank bail-ins. Now, we have been hearing over the last while about the situation in Cyprus. Now, in Cyprus, what they did was they used a new method of stabilizing banks that have gotten themselves into trouble, and the way they got themselves into trouble, believe it or not, was exactly the same way that they got into trouble over back in the day of the Great Depression of 1929, the stock market crash. It crashed for the same reasons we got problems now, and those reasons are messing around with the derivatives market. In other words, the stock community, the investment community, and that's just about everybody who is corporate in this world and a whole bunch of people who want to make money off corporations even though they're not part of them. This is what the community has now come up with to stabilize itself, and they're called bail-ins. Now, you may have heard that word. You may not understand what it means. But if you go back to the recession that we had in 2008, they called it a recession. Most of us who were suffering the effects of it called it a crash. But, of course, they get to paint these things with whatever descriptors they want to use. But at any rate, back then, they had a lot of problems with the derivative market, and things crashed, and Lehman Brothers crashed, and all these institutions that were supposedly too big to fail actually failed. So what happened was our beloved president of the land south of our border here decided that, you know, he was going to bail everybody out. So he did. And he bailed them out. Didn't tell anybody exactly what the numbers were. They worked out into the trillions, but it was like $700 billion that was given out. Some of that has been paid back, some of that has not. But It was taxpayer money. That was the thing. It was taxpayer money that was used to bail out these banks. Well, this time, they're not going to bail out the banks with taxpayer money. This time, they're going to bail out the banks with depositor money. Now, this is it's like a shock and a half to anybody who has money in the bank. First of all, they say to themselves, oh, well, my bank account is insured. Really? Well, if your bank account is insured by the Canadian Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation in the States, guess what? No, you aren't. And the reason why you're not is because the FDIC itself was the source of the bail-in idea. Now let's take a look at what happened in Cyprus. Okay, what happened in Cyprus was they closed all the banks for a few days. The banks took a holiday. And in the meantime, Cypriots, of course, were going nuts because they're hearing their government's going to allow this and that and everything else, and people are going to get money taken out of their accounts. And there was a lot of money taken out of their accounts. In fact, smaller businesses, businesses that were not multinational corporations that did have, in fact, advanced knowledge of what was coming, those who did not get their money out of Cyprus in advance got a haircut. And that haircut for some businesses was as much as 60% of their liquid assets. Now, 60% of anybody's liquid assets is going to put most of us into the can, you know. And when you're talking about a whole lot of smaller businesses, well, that clears the playing field for the multinationals who were protected, doesn't it? So, in other words, they're wiping out small business in favor of big business. And on top of that, they're taking money out of the pockets of people who have already earned the money. They've already paid income tax on the money. Now they have it in the bank, supposedly safe, and along comes the bank itself and takes the money. So what do you do about that? Well, there's nothing you can do. And the reason you can't do anything is twofold. Firstly, because it's legal according to law. And secondly, because when you put money in a bank, any bank, credit union, bank, whatever, okay, you put your money in the bank, you're not just giving it to them to take care of it for you. Okay, there's a reason why they're giving you interest on your money. They'll tell you, oh, well, it's because we're going to use your money and, you know, you can have it back anytime you want, but we put it into a general fund and this is how we operate our bank. Okay, so under fractional reserve, they only have to have so much money out of all the money that is actually on account with them. They only have to have about 10% of that on hand. Well, it's kind of interesting. When you look at the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation in the States, they've got trillions and trillions of dollars insured, but they've only got about $25 billion to pay off on. So what happens if these banks fail? You see, what happens is, all of a sudden, the banks are on the hook for trillions. So rather than hit the taxpayer, the FDIC itself in 2009, along with the Bank of England, presented to the G20 at 2009 in London, England, and this was the G20 where Harper was late for the photo opportunity, and they had to retake the shot. But at any rate, this happened in 2009, where the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation itself turned on its depositors and said, we're going to take the money from depositors. And this was accepted in 2009 by the G20, which includes, of course, the U.S. and Canada and Great Britain and all these different countries, 20 of them, right? The same guys who were in Toronto in 2010. And if you will recall, Canadians may recall, I don't know whether Americans will, at the end of the 2010 G20, there was a press conference in Toronto. at that press conference, Mr. Harper, our beloved Prime Minister, Harperius I call him, Mr. Harper came out and did a press conference, and he said, in response to a question from the reporters, they had signed the Basel III agreement on behalf of Canada, and that Basel III is the agreement between the banks, the big banks of the world, how they are going to run their business. So, if you will recall, around that time, Harper had been bragging furiously around the world about how Canada's great banking regulations saved Canada from the brunt of that recession. Did it really? Well, you know, it felt a little different for those of us on the ground. However, notwithstanding that, those bank regulations are the same ones he just signed away in the Basel III agreement. So what's he say in the press conference? And I quote, "Well, I know some people don't like it, and it is a loss of sovereignty, but it's a simple reality." Anyway, wait a minute. Simple reality? This is a simple reality of life, is it? That we hand away the very laws, our domestic sovereign laws, we hand them over to an international group, which then tells us how we're going to run our banking system in our country, no matter what Canadians want or what Canadians say or what even our government says. This is the nature of an international agreement. They are contracts. They're not just a handshake and, yeah, we'll do business that way from now on. Oh, no, no, no. Oh, no. They can enforce these things, and by enforce, I mean enforce. They can hit you with millions and billions in sanctions per day. Per day. Okay? And we have many, many instances, if people will think back in their own memory, think back how many trade disputes have there been. And when you hear about it in the news, it sounds pretty innocuous. Oh, well, we got a trade dispute happening, and it's in court. And, you know, this tribunal is going to set it up and fix it up, and everything will be fine, go back to sleep. These things are a whole lot bigger than that. You're talking about multi-millions and billions of taxpayer dollars, because if a country violates a trade agreement, it is the country that gets sanctioned, and those sanctions are our money. Okay, so here's Harper in 2010. He's given away our banking rules. That brings us to present day and Cyprus and a haircut that those people just suffered. Everybody got haircut. Everybody lost money out of their accounts, even the poorest lost money out of their accounts. They're trying to keep that quiet, but it's true. It's true. They got haircuts, up to 60% some of them. Some of them got very small reductions because they didn't have bugger all in the bank in the first place. But those people who had larger deposits, they lost huge chunks of their money. And, of course, you've got people lining up in Cyprus right now. They have like a daily draw from an ATM, and they're closing one big bank and moving depositors over. And guess what they're giving you in exchange for this money? Now, bear in mind, of course, they have to be honorable about this, right? They can't just take the money and leave you with nothing. So what do they give you? Are you buckled up? Because you ought to be. They're giving you stock. Okay, in the same bank that just failed, so they had to take your money. Now, there's a company I'd want to invest in. I mean, I'd be calling up my broker right away and say, hey, invest everything I've got in that bank, man. They're going to skyrocket. Like, what? Are you kidding me? Are you freaking well kidding me? And here's the hard part to swallow, people. I told you. These things came out of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation of the United States of America. Who do you think is going to get hit with haircuts next? And we have it in the new budget bill that our Mr. Flaherty had the audacity to place in our current budget legislation. It's right in there. And you think, what's he doing? Is he being dumb enough to copy Cyprus? No, he's not copying Cyprus. Cyprus is copying the G20. Cyprus didn't come up with this all on their own. This has been plotted for 4 years. 4 years they've had this on the drawing board, and they were just looking for a place to use it. And they've used it now on Cyprus. So, what's coming for Canadians? What's coming for Americans? Oh, my, my, my. The legislation is there. They make no fanfare about it. Some eagle-eyed conspiracy theorists spot it, and the next thing you know, people are trying to diminish that because of the source of the information. Well, when the money goes missing out of your own bank account, maybe you won't be so quick to call it a theory. I mean, lately, I don't know about you listeners, I know a lot of you are very aware you wouldn't be listening at all. Okay, but my own experience has been, you go tell some people about this, they look at you like you got three heads. You know, and I have said, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so, more times in the last few weeks than I have in the last 10 years. Why is that? Well, that's because it's been more than 10 years that I've been warning people about these international agreements of all stripes. Now, about 2 months ago or so, I was talking about something else that's on the agenda, and that is they were talking about the Foreign Investment Protection Agreement between Canada and China. And Canadians were getting all upset because, hey, China's got this lousy, rotten human rights record, and you know, all their products are garbage, and their labor laws are ridiculous, and their people are starving, and they're abused, and they're imprisoned, and they're this, and they're that. And, of course, while everybody's all hot under the collar about the proposed financial investment protection agreement with China, what's going on but the Trans-Pacific Partnership? Okay, now the Trans-Pacific Partnership is something that has been going on pretty much under the table for a while. And what it's basically done is that it is very, very, very expansive and comprehensive, this agreement. It is essentially a top-secret agreement, and it puts the international tribunal formed by this agreement, it puts this particular thing above U.S. law. Okay? I mean, we're talking above U.S. law. Now, this came out in thenewamerican.com. It was one of many, 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 many places that took it up. It's being negotiated in secret. It agrees to exempt foreign corporations from U.S. laws and regulation. It places the resolution of any disputes as to the applicability of those matters to foreign business in the hands of an international arbitration tribunal overseen by the Secretary General of the United Nations. Okay, in repeating this, okay, you have to realize that if this is overseen by the Secretary General of the United Nations, it has nothing whatsoever to do with a democratic vote by anybody. Okay, no democratic votes here. No democracy. No sovereignty. No nothing. Now, one of the organizations defending the sovereignty of the United States, which is largely shot full of holes, is Americans for Limited Government. And they released a statement drawing attention to the TPP agreement, which, again, this is Trans-Pacific Partnership, as well as pointing out some of the most noxious aspects of it. Now, let's go through a couple of these because you need to understand these agreements, that, like the one with the bank. Okay, these agreements are international, and the danger of them is that they leave you no alternative but to follow what is said internationally. They leave you no vote, no say, no power at all. The people's power is cut off completely at the ground. Okay, your power to object is cut off completely. Only the country itself can sue, and only in an international trade court. And only that trade court can arbitrate these disputes, and only your government can speak. So that means that if you own a business, okay, and you feel that your government has done you dirt on this issue, you can't sue the government. You have to try to sue the tribunal, and you can't. There's no legal mechanism to do that. We are left without a pot to pee in, basically, in terms of our rights. And if you start counting all of these trade agreements that our governments have signed, you will realize very quickly there is no such thing as sovereignty in North America anymore, and indeed, there is very little sovereignty left in the world. These agreements put everybody that is a local business operator at a competitive disadvantage. They can appeal. Foreign firms can appeal federal regulatory and court rulings to an international tribunal, and they can overrule our sovereignty. If foreign companies want to do business in America, they ought to follow the same rules as everyone else. If they want to do business in Canada, they ought to follow the same rules as anyone else. No special favors. However, they're going to get them because of these trade pacts. And then again, we go back to the banking. And no, it's not, like I said, it's not an idiosyncrasy. It's not those crazy Cypriots screwing things up again. This is the international law that is coming down on all of us. This is why the United States has bail-in proposals. They have them already. We have them already in Canada. They're in our budget already. And what they're doing, in essence, is they're repealing every law and regulation that make business cost ineffective, and they're making every law that is being put upon us, they're putting it in place to enhance international business, not local business, international business. So, you know, we've seen over the last few decades, we've seen how when Walmart moves into town, small business leaves. And why is that? Well, that's because you can do everything in one place with a Walmart, right? You got your pharmacy, you got your food, you got your clothing, you got your pharmacy. They got everything. It's a one-stop shop. And it's also cheap because they bring in cheap products from where? Well, from China, those people that were putting together this blessed foreign investment protection agreement with. Because, yeah, that's still real. It's not like it's fake. It was a red herring, but it's not fake. So here we are. We're in this kind of a mess, and people are blithely going about their day. And I go up to them, and I say, hey, have you heard about this? Have you heard about that? Oh, I've got no time for that. I've got no time to listen to that. I've got no time to pay attention to that. Well, you know, when they start taking everything that you've got, including your property, by eminent domain and by expropriation, when they start taking everything that you got, well, maybe you'll have time then. You know, maybe you'll have time then. And maybe the friends of yours, you know, that you may have been trying to tell this stuff to, maybe at that point they will start listening too. Now, in the meantime, the U.S. and Canada, you're dealing with putting foreign entanglements. Now, you will recognize, Americans will recognize the term foreign entanglements. These are the same ones the founding fathers warned against. Okay, these foreign entanglements that would change the way America is governed. And they were right, weren't they? Because here it is. It's right in our faces. Now, the only way that these agreements should be happening, according to our constitutions, is that you can't, the country can't enter a treaty that would abrogate the Constitution. That would, wouldn't that make sense? I mean, this is what establishes your nation as a nation, is your Constitution and your sovereignty. Okay. Now, in the meantime, you're looking at agreements that essentially force the United States and Canada and anybody else joining these agreements to exempt these other groups from environmental, financial, banking, all these different regulations that each country has, and it makes it cost ineffective to do business. Now, all of a sudden, guess what? They're making it cheaper to do business here. So what are they doing? They're taking away the laws that our people put together, trying to put together the best interest of the population. Well, at least we believed it at the time. That's another story. Don't get me started. But, you know, all of a sudden, we don't have the ability to fight anything. And this is where it's going. Oh, dear, I tell you, the whole world is going nuts. It is going nuts right in front of our eyes. And you wonder how come our government can't listen to us. They literally can't. They literally can't. If you've been listening, if you've been paying attention for the last 20, 25 minutes, then you know these people cannot listen to us. They are prevented from these international agreements. They are prevented from listening to what we want. And that means that our governments have, all together, all of them, have given away the sovereignty of our nations. And they're giving it away piece by piece by piece by piece to the point where we have none left. Now, I have a special guest joining me momentarily. Not a guest that you're unfamiliar with. You've seen her before. And it just happens to be my friend Quito, and she is one of the people whose opinion I will always listen to, because she's always that bang on. She is the one who wrote the book, A Calamity Threatens Your Happiness, and that is based on the tradition that in the old days on the Red Road, in the native communities, when there were no telephones and there were no radios and there were no TVs, if the tribe wanted to know if it was safe to go to sleep that night, they'd send a guy up a pine tree, and he'd look around from where the eagles nest, way up in the top, and he would look around the entire landscape and see if anything was coming to threaten the tribe. And if it was, he would descend down to the ground and say, a calamity threatens your happiness. And boy, I tell you, when I went through this book, I go, holy smokes, did she ever write this well? And did she ever name it aptly? Because a calamity is threatening all of our happiness. It's not just even the stuff she wrote about. It is all of us. Now, I've been up the pine tree, and my friend Quito has been up the pine tree. And what we see, we don't like. So without further ado, I introduce you again to Quito. Welcome, Quito.
Greetings and thanks, Dee.
Yeah, well, you know I have an awful lot of respect for you. I mean, you came in to my life out of the blue. Out of the blue. It was sort of like, you know, we were kind of destined to cross paths.
Oh,
it was
one of
those things. And boy, I have found our liaison to be more than valuable. And I really hope that people will And, you know, at the end of the show, we'll have to talk about the Eagle Watch newsletter.
Yeah.
And how they can get on that, because I don't think ever before, and you can tell me if you agree or not, but I'm pretty sure you do, I don't think ever before our interests in Canada particularly have been aligned more closely with the Indigenous population than it is now.
Well, that's just about what I was going to say in listening to your introductory remarks there, as far as how Canadians are feeling this loss of power and loss of recognition that we Indigenous have been dealing with for a very, very long time. And as I contend in some of my more recent work, from examining the treaties, especially the numbered treaties that Canada made with Anishinaabe people, mostly, the Crown sought to divide the settlers that they put there from the Indigenous people who were already there, because the Crown was trying to control the money flow, and so they encouraged this separation. But now, yeah, it's, you know, experience makes people realize, if they take the time to think about it, that, that we have some things in common. I hardly know where to begin, because there's so many things that you're talking about there, and I can address so many of the points that, that you're covering. But just as a quick response to what you're saying, basically what you're talking about there with the banking thing is a term called capital controls. And if I don't have all the information right at my fingertips, but if your listeners want to Google that term, search that term, capital controls, some of the top think tanks are working on this very topic. Because in part of what they're doing, and it's done incrementally, is to control the flow of money going in and out of each country as
mm-hmm.
they further destroy nationness. Some of the examples that we see as far as how this is brought in incrementally is, you know, following the 911 stuff that we never stop hearing about. They brought in legislation regarding donations to groups that were on this terrorist list. But what that has led to, and a lot of people don't realize, because, well, a lot of us don't have that amount of money, but if you have money in the bank and you go to withdraw $10,000 or more, or do something with $10,000, that's where they start their scrutiny. You can't just do that.
Actually, they changed that. Now it's 5,000.
Well, there you go.
And it's like, if you pay off your Visa bill, they want to know what you did with your $5,000. I'm going, hello, I'm paying a bill.
And so, yeah, so this is all being done incrementally.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of poor people don't have the cash flow to recognize how that's happening. It just doesn't concern us. And another one that they've, as far as controlling the cash flow, right, capital controls, is banks no longer honor third-party checks. So if somebody writes you a check and you want to give it to someone else to cash in their account, you're not allowed to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So only the payee can cash the check. Even if you have a Canada Post money order, which is technically cashable at Canada Post kiosks, although if it's a large amount, they usually don't have the cash on hand, so you have to go to a bank. But you can't cash it at a bank unless you can give them an account number.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't have to go through the account. It doesn't have to be deposited in the account, because it's a Canada Post money order, right? It's supposed
mm-hmm.
to be good anywhere, but they still want to track these things. Just to keep track of the money flow.
Yeah, not only that, I don't know if you're aware of this, but if you get a U.S. postal money order, you can't get it cashed except at a bank.
Except at a bank, yeah.
Yeah,
that's what's happening.
And even if you take it to some banks won't touch them with a 10-foot pole or a 9-foot Ukrainian.
Well, this
they won't
is
touch
it.
Them. And what their excuse is, is that, oh, these things are too easy to counterfeit.
Yeah, right.
And going, well, excuse me, if they're too easy to counterfeit, how about you redesign the damn things?
Right. But as I was saying, most of us don't have the money to be concerned about.
No, we don't. That's exactly the point. I mean, if you aren't involved in high finance, you're not going to pay attention.
But then again, you've got, before I get to more important things, and it does involve increasing numbers of indigenous people, because we put ourselves on the line. All the band councils, they're all corporations, and they are all subject to the same expropriation and seizure as anybody else, right?
Exactly. And what would happen if we had bank haircuts going on and they took, like they did in Cyprus, 60% of the assets?
Well, that's basically what they plan to do, but they just call it different things.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, they've got different titles, different words that they use, and of course, if you're not supposed to notice that these words are synonymous with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're not supposed to notice that, hey, if they apply this way, that means that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to wind up with no money, and the band's going to wind up with no money. And, you know, that sounds rather counterintuitive, considering the fact that they keep saying, well, we keep piling money into these reserves, and where does it go? Well, if they can take it, it didn't go anywhere. You know, if they can take it out of your account, it hasn't been spent.
Yes, exactly, and there's so much of that going on. And we know all about expropriation of our property.
Oh, you think?
I have to laugh. I mean, it's not funny, but somebody sent me a list of how to insult everybody, and it basically was...
Oh, gosh, send it to me.
You know, and obviously it would be written by a person of European ancestry, and the male in particular. So through the list of these insulting comments, there's stuff about women, there's stuff about Africans, there's stuff about Asians, there's stuff about Native people, there's stuff about everybody that you could try to insult, which is the whole intent. But there's nothing that, I mean, obviously the white male isn't going to say anything to about the other white male, but really what it comes down to is the poor me complex that the most exploited of people can have, you know? So when you see working class white males getting the crunch the way the rest of the world's been dealing with, it's pretty interesting. But there's a lot of everything's changing so much right now.
Yeah.
It's almost tiresome when you have to process so much every day of what's going on in the world.
It's overwhelming.
It is overwhelming, and I think it's intended to be overwhelming.
Of course it is.
This is all
divide and conquer.
It is. It's intended to breed hopelessness, and yes, to divide and conquer, to pit people against each other, when we should be recognizing our commonalities
and sorting it out. There's that aspect of divide and conquer, okay? But they're even more subtle about it now, okay? It used to be just they'd pit one side against the other and play this Hegelian dialectic crap on us. But now they're even smarter than that. Now they're hitting us with all these different issues, okay? I mean, just off the top of my head, what are the issues that I could... you know, easily go through hours and hours and hours on...
just listing them.
Just listing them, okay? We're looking at, okay, we have the indigenous issues, we have fluoride, we have vaccines, we have pharmaceutical products, we have medical care, we have health care in general. We have government not listening to population, we have environment issues, we have banking issues, we have chemtrails, we have, I mean, name it.
I wouldn't mind adding a few.
Well, go right ahead. I mean, there's thousands.
There are censorship issues and issues of fraud and pretense. There are identity issues. a whole lot of things along those lines there. And the most troubling one that I struggle with right now is with all the protests and the resistance to this and that, is it real or is it a pretense? And this is a real struggle of a topic to deal with, even in retrospect of things that we've been involved in. And it brings up that thing that you and I were talking about earlier, is if we've been fooled, we hate to admit it.
Big
People
time.
Don't want to admit they're wrong, so that keeps the pretense going. It keeps the fraud happening, and the people that are laughing all the way to the bank, which is appropriate metaphor under circumstances. But, yeah, because we had that protest out here, as you know, in 2007. It was anti-uranium mining protest that was staged by some Algonquin people of the area and their settler supporters. And because I live in the area, I knew a lot of the key players and was able to go to the protest site on any time I wanted during the 100 days. I had insights to begin with, and I saw things as they were unfolding. And the whole thing was, if you tell people there's a secret, and you say to all these different people separately, you say, this is a secret, you got to keep this secret. So then when those people are thrown together, everybody's acting like the Mona Lisa, the cat that swallowed the mouse, everybody's got a secret.
Uh-huh.
But they're not talking to each other about what the secret is.
Uh-huh.
So there's
even
all
though
these,
they all know it.
They all know the secret, but everybody doesn't have the same information of what the secret is.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a lot of people nowadays, especially the green activists, who I find a lot of times are a little bit flat. They're lacking a little bit of depth. They don't watch enough TV, okay? Because the example I want to raise here is one that they're not familiar with. Did you ever see a show called Candid Camera? Okay, so you've got the film crew is on the street, right? They're on the street where people are doing whatever people do on the street. But they've created a scenario, and people walking down the street who don't see the cameras and don't know what's going on, they walk right into it. And they're the subject in a script that's unfolding around them, and at the end of it, they're told, ha, 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 hi, you're on Candid Camera, right?
Yep.
But in a phony protest, it doesn't work that way. There's layers and layers, and the key players have created this scenario, just like Candid Camera, and there are cameras. There's lots of cameras. You may not see all of them, but they're there. Sometimes you see the ones that the police have as they go around and they film everybody, and they get all the names and people's comments and license plate numbers and who's with who and et cetera, et cetera. This is one of the perks of the staged protest because it draws all these people to it who want to protest whatever the case may be. So all these sincere and genuine people who are possibly naive, possibly not doing enough research, they walk into this and they start interacting. And the key players are standing back because they've created the scenario, and so it unfolds. So then the media comes along and starts reporting on the protests and names the people who are there and quotes certain people and not quoting other people. Some people's views are censored.
Mm-hmm.
So then a picture starts to be spread out through the media, and then other people, activists, whatever you want to call people, concerned individuals, you know, everybody starts reacting, forming their opinion. Some of them come to the site. Some just beak off in a faraway place without knowing what they're talking about. And this whole reality is created. But it's not real. It's not true. And
mm-hmm.
it's perpetuated over time to where, as recently as last week, I had a person write to me and ask if we could get together for coffee to discuss the stuff that went on up here.
Mm-hmm.
They agreed with a lot of my opinions, but they did not agree with my take on what happened. Their point being that they were an adult. In fact, they were a senior, and that they considered themselves to be very astute, and they did not think they had been fooled.
Uh-huh.
So I wrote back and said, sure, I'd be glad to meet with you, but if you're trying to say that certain individuals, like Robert Lovelace, were genuine, then there's nothing to talk about.
Uh-huh.
Because I've already proven that, and if you don't accept that, well, I don't think there's anything else I can say to you.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, how much proof is needed to prove anything?
Often, if you're talking about documentation or witnesses, well, that's hidden. That's taken away because that's part of the whole thing and how it ends up being called a conspiracy theory.
Oh, yes.
That's a way to dismiss us, you know?
Uh-huh. Well, I hate to tell anybody, but you know what? There are such things as conspiracies.
Well, that's how crime is often committed in secret.
Mm-hmm. That's well, they're not all theoretical either, are they?
No, they're not. They're conspiracies, for sure. And when we can piece together this cartel of elitists, it's the same people over and over and over again, and they put together these groups that are based on the same template over and over again. You know, I was reading an article that's put out by Counterpunch, a very popular magazine. It's written by a Canadian woman actually named Corey Morningstar, and it's about, well, where's the title of it? I'm trying to find the title of it. Keystone XL, The Art of NGO Discourse.
Uh-huh.
Gloat like Rockefeller when watching trains. And it's a very long article, and I admit I haven't finished reading it, but it's fascinating, and it's got links to articles that support what she's saying. And to summarize it, really, as far as the whole oil pipeline issue, which is probably about the biggest one, the single one there is, there's other ways of getting the oil out, and they're not going to stop. And when, you know, people like the Rockefellers are financing the greater part of the resistance, we got a problem.
Big time.
And,
Big time.
And the worst of it is people not realizing what's going on, that these two sides are being orchestrated. Indigenous people, and I've discovered all over the world, there have long been the myth of the two-headed serpent,
uh-huh.
which is it's like the Hegelian dialectic, same thing, two heads that you see are attached to the same body.
Yep.
And this is the thing that people need to see, and it's a metaphor that in any language you can understand that if you want to open your eyes. But if you've been wrong, this is this human trait of people not wanting to admit that they were wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
So how are we going to fix this?
Well, you actually hit it on the head in that statement that you just made. You talked about a two-headed snake, both attached to the same body. And that represents two viewpoints, but nothing in between.
Nothing in between, not us.
So I'm reminded of George Bush's famous statement after 9/11. What did he say? You're either with us or you're with the terrorists. And I'm going, wait a minute. I don't trust the United States government, and I don't trust terrorists either. So I'm going to go looking for the truth.
Yeah.
And, you know, my first thought when they started hopping up and down about the World Trade Center going down, my first thought was, if you're doing things correctly in terms of, you know, human behavior, the correct response would be, how have I offended you? The response should not be, I'm going to get you for that. You know, it shouldn't be immediate. You should first you find out, why did they do this? If, in fact, anybody did it that was outside the country, which is, of course, the nexus of all the rest of the argument, who actually did it.
Yeah.
But the bottom line was they never even asked why. And because they didn't ask why, they missed a huge component. Now, we're not touching on why. When we see a two-headed snake, we're not ever asking why.
Right.
We're saying there's a head and there's another head. Pick one.
Yep, yep.
That's what Hegel says, okay? Pick one.
Pick one, exactly. Yeah,
but there's so much in between that needs to be assessed and understood, and nobody, aside from what is called conspiracy theorists, what is called those people who are crazy that you don't want to listen to, namely you and me and people like us, okay, what's going on there is all these other people are failing to look for what's in between. We're failing to ask why.
Yeah.
And when
yeah.
you get into the why, then you get into things like Agenda 21 and why is it that this land is being taken and why is it that these wars are being fomented all over the place and why is it that there is this imperialism sweeping the world right now? Why is that?
Yeah. Well, you know, we have to be careful in how in the words we use, because unfortunately, and you must find this too, is a lot of times as soon as I start to talk, especially if I'm talking to someone who doesn't know me very well, that I'm immediately identified with one of those two camps.
Uh-huh.
I've actually been called a racist. And that
oh, yeah.
is one, you know, it's like, can I talk about anything here? You know, if you talk about ethnic groups, you're now a racist because you mention it. And here I am, I don't, in my belief system, race is a construct. There's really no such thing. It's another part of the divide and conquer of setting people against each other.
Yep.
So that's the first difficulty we deal with is being labeled as soon as we open our mouths because we don't belong to either of those camps.
Exactly.
So
somebody wants to put a label on it, and you know when they say the devil is in the details, are they kidding? No, they're not, because it's those little details where you find the motives behind things. It's those little details, like why are they doing this and why are they doing that? Well, you'll find the devil in there. If you look for it, you will find it.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
that's where they are.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, there's so many things, you know, and there's this whole huge protest movement that's unfolding right now with that Keystone Pipeline. It really concerns me because there's a lot of prominent indigenous people who have become involved in it. And I personally have never gotten the vibe. I don't get the feeling for it. I am very concerned about petrochemical pollution. I live with environmental sensitivities. It affects my life minute by minute. It's not that I doubt that there are environmental issues, but the whole movement that is acting as the resistance and claiming to be the whole resistance, it's not real. And so then we've got these right-wing writers like this Vivian Krause, who gets her articles in the Financial Post all the time. I don't know about you, but I've never been published in such a media, you know.
So well, she of course gets, not.
She takes the right-wing point of view to completely denounce the whole environmentalism because Rockefellers are behind it and saying that it's just a capitalist ploy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, it really messes things up, and then we end up arguing about every last friggin' detail.
Exactly.
And that's what they want us to do.
Of course,
they want us to do that.
Keep us busy. Keep, you know, it's like bread and circuses, kind of in reverse, because they're giving us a circus, all right. But, you know, we've always got, there's something different to fight. And every time
always.
We turn around, there's something to fight. So, you know, I'm getting email all the time from this group fighting fluoride, and this group's fighting smart meters, and this
yeah.
group is fighting chemtrails, and this group is fighting vaccines, and this one is fighting medical tyranny, and this one's fighting Health Canada, and this one's fighting the FDA. And by the time I read off the list, I'm tired.
Yeah,
I haven't done anything except read it, and
yep.
I'm tired already. And then I look at, well, wait a minute. I always find that solutions are found in the commonalities between things. Peace is always found on common ground.
Yep.
You find common ground with somebody, you'll build a friendship.
Yeah.
If you don't have common ground with anybody, you're going to wind up with an enemy.
Yeah.
You know? So the common ground is what I look for. I look for that in spiritual matters. I look for, you know, like the law of karma, for example. As you sow, so shall you reap. Every religion on the planet has maintained that.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. And I don't care which one you talk about. You put it out, you get it back. Even in the vernacular, what goes around comes around. Right? So mm-hmm. we have something there that is a key to everything. It's the key to everything as far as I'm concerned. And that is, if you act harmlessly, if everybody on this planet simply acted harmlessly, what would we have here? What would we have? We would have paradise. If we simply acted harmlessly to one another, no matter who it was, and harmlessly to the self as well, because we do a lot of damage to ourselves.
Well, this is true, but how are we going to make that happen?
Well,
it's almost impossible to get one or two other people.
Yeah, and why is that? Well, it's because everybody's got their own idea of what an issue everything is.
Yeah.
Everybody's got their own ding-blasted idea. And when you come down to the commonality between all these points, what you've got is a harm-doer and a harm-preventer. Okay? That's what every one of these groups is fighting, a harm-doer, an evil-doer, and every one of them is trying to establish something decent. Well, there's your common principle. And where does that principle emanate from? I hate to say it. But remember the old Pogo cartoon? We have seen the enemy, and he is us.
Yeah, yeah.
The ultimate responsibility comes back on these poor schmucks, namely the population of the world, who are dumbed down. They're dumbed down. They're beaten up emotionally, spiritually, physically, every other way possible that could be dumbed down. That's what they are now. They can't think.
They can't think.
And because they can't think, this is what we get. And what you just mentioned, okay, they label one way or another. They label it. And once they have a label on it, they think. They understand it.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, even in the little book that I wrote, I said that words are really poor descriptors of things. Because each word that we have internally, we each have a definition for that word. Like, for instance, if I say the word boyfriend to you, okay?
That's a good one.
Any word, boyfriend is a good one. Or girlfriend, as the case may be. Now you have, in a relationship, you have a boyfriend and a girlfriend.
That are a man and a woman.
A man and a woman, but they're boyfriend and girlfriend. And now they've got the labels on them. What does she expect from the label of boyfriend, and what does he expect from the label of girlfriend?
Yeah.
And if our definitions of those words are different from each other, are we going to have a relationship for long?
Right. No.
You see, this is how they do it. On any level. And at all levels, and this is the thing that is most upsetting to me, is look at how they have installed the sexual agendas with our kids.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is enough to scare the living bejeebers out of me, because you're talking about the gay population, for example, and, you know, before I get called a homophobe.
We have to be very careful on this
topic.
Yeah,
I know. We have to be politically correct or somebody's going to get upset. Well, you know, quite frankly, I don't give a hairy hoot what anybody does in the privacy of their own home, as long as there's no harm involved.
Right, right.
I don't care. You know, it's not my business and I don't want to know.
Well, you're talking about the meanings of words, and I can go to a simpler word and we'll still get in trouble.
Okay, what is it?
My.
Yeah!
Okay, now the example I like to give, because this really affects our indigenous identity, our indigenous sovereignty issues, interpretation of treaties, and every legal document that you can think of is the word my, and
mm-hmm.
how the meanings of words are changed with cultural changes. Okay, so you say my mother, and you say my car.
Mm-hmm.
Same little two-lettered word, my, but hopefully a completely different meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we indigenous have been led into by increments.
Yeah.
Of how we view ourselves and what is ours.
Yeah, and it doesn't. It skews your meaning of the word "my" in terms of what you own,
what you
and
own,
and in terms of what you're affiliated to.
Yes. So when you say "my mother," that's an affiliation.
Yeah,
that's
you don't own your mother.
That's not an ownership.
No.
And so that's the same thing. When it is talks about our relationship with the land and how these treaties are nothing but tricks. And we've got a lot of our people now who are going on and on about treaties, but it's still a waste of time, really, because the treaties were tricks, and it was to change the meaning of the word my, so that we now say my mother is the same as my car.
Uh-huh.
And that's obscene.
Yes, it is obscene, because in truth, none of us owns anything.
We certainly don't own our mothers, and we don't own our mother, the earth. And
we don't even own our cars. If you want to get into common law, we don't own anything we own. I actually do want to touch on some of this.
Sure, sure. I'm just kidding.
But no, you're not. But, essentially, you're looking at a situation where if you take out the deed to your own house, okay, anybody who's a homeowner, take a good look at your deed. Take a look at even your offers to purchase real estate. You're not purchasing the land. You're not buying the land. You're only buying the right to use the land. The land is registered. Regis means it's Latin, it's the possessive sense of the word rex, which is king.
Yeah, yeah.
Rex regis. Okay, so in other words, when you register anything, it is basically king's land. So you are referred to on your deed of land as a tenant, not as the owner, but as a tenant. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means that any law that supersedes that, i.e. in the state's eminent domain, which is not a phrase that is used in Canada, but it is in effect, because if the government wants your land, they take it.
Yeah, yeah.
Plain and simple. So what do you own anyway? You don't own squat.
Yeah.
The money isn't real. It's all based on debt. It's not on the gold standard anymore. We can see that for a fact now, because how do banks fail anyway? How do they fail? If all they have is money, how do they fail?
It's the power. It's the
exactly.
The power that goes with it. And
yeah.
This article I was mentioning a few minutes ago, there's it talks just about that in terms of the one of the top billionaires, Warren Buffett, who is involved in this shipping oil by rail and forget about the pipelines, right? And in fact,
mm-hmm.
protest against the pipelines, and we'll have more oil to go by rail. That's what he's doing. Him and Bill Gates.
Uh-huh.
They're getting into the Alberta oil sands, and they are going to ship it by rail. And
oh yeah,
let
and
everybody
they
protest pipelines.
Oh yeah, and now they've got. Now don't forget, they've been building that superhighway from Texas north to Winnipeg. Okay.
Yeah.
That Trans-Texas Corridor, the TTC, which is contracted out to a Spanish company by the name of Cintra, which actually owns a number of highways in Canada, including the 407 north of Toronto. They're the guys who collect the tolls for those of you who use the 407 to get from here to there.
SNC-Lavalin runs that.
Yeah, well, Cintra was the one that built it. Yeah,
right?
Well, Cintra was a construction company. They're also tied in with the TTC.
Okay.
And SNC-Lavalin has been involved in all of that.
Yeah, because they're building cities
company.
Now.
Oh,
they're building
yeah.
a city in Algeria right now. They do it all. They do everything.
Oh,
but
yeah.
There's this, this little quote about Warren Buffett and the whole thing about the power thing that goes with money, and it's just a it's an intimidation thing. It's a magic wand, and it's saying here that he actually lives a relatively modest lifestyle in relation to his wealth, and it shows that it's not the love or the need of money that inspires one to pursue such wealth. Rather, it is the addiction to power.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, Henry Kissinger, in his autobiography, he states that power is the ultimate aphrodisiac.
Of course it is. And what did Kissinger also say? He said, if you want to control a nation, control the money. And he said, if you want to control the people of the nation, control the food.
Oh, you got it.
And what is going on with our food supply right now?
Home.
Who is starting to control all our food?
Well, it started, you see, it started for indigenous people. It started with the crown, when the crown claimed ownership of all the wild animals.
Uh-huh.
So then we're forced to get a license to hunt for food. And this is one of a major troubling issue in many of our communities right across the land, because if you're not a good, upstanding member in your band, then your license to hunt for food is taken from you, and you can be arrested and put in jail. And there are many cases like this that go on across the land, and especially with non-status indigenous people who are just feeling like our backs are completely against the wall, and sometimes
which they are,
which well certainly, and sometimes it's a choice between having a good venison steak or fried bologna.
Uh huh. And speaking of which, that brings me on to something that I've been it's been sitting on the in the back of my mind for the last few minutes, and that is long before you or I were born. And long before this country existed as a country slash corporation slash colonial conquered land, whatever you want to call it, long before any of that, the indigenous were here, and what were they eating? What did they eat? Well, corn, squash, and beans were their main agricultural crops, right? Corn, squash, and beans, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then on top of that, they had the fish of the waters, and they had the deer and the other animals of the forest. And this is what they survived on. This was the fruit of the land, the way we have always on
the
this
fruits,
planet.
Yeah, the fruits of the land, living off the land, and the empowerment that goes with getting your own food from the land instead of having to buy it from someone else.
Exactly, and eat the processing.
It from you.
Yeah, and altering it, and
altering the food.
Yeah, all that stuff. All of that has been taken from the indigenous, not just their land. Because when you look at, I mean, I looked at the articles they're talking about. I mean, over the past year, it's been literally every week or every month there's been something to do with the problems on the reserves and the costs of living up there and this and that. You know, milk is $6 a liter and yada yada and stuff like that.
Bologna is very expensive too.
That's what brought me back was bologna, because bologna is not something that was ever in the indigenous diet. They didn't make bologna.
No, we didn't.
So if you're making bologna sandwiches on a reserve, that means you're not living according to the Red Road at all. And that means somebody has taken that away from you.
Yeah, yeah. And probably the worst part of the bologna sandwich is the bread.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah, this is a very serious thing. And as this is going all the way to, you know, as we know where it's going with Monsanto and Kissinger's plan of controlling the food supply, and the things they're putting in our food, the things they're putting in our water deliberately, you know, like things like the fluoride and what it does to people. So we're powerless. So what are people going to do? Like, what are we going to do? What are people going to do if only they would wake up to these things? Because
yeah, well, you
up
know
at
what?
The last minute, when you wake up, when that burglar's standing over you in your bed, you don't have much time or space to defend yourself.
Yeah, well, they're not even noticing the ding-blasted burglars standing over their bed on a daily basis, and this is what's really, really wrong. We're living in a state of fear, fear-induced blindness, because we are afraid to scream at City Hall. We're afraid of our own governors. We're afraid that when we elect somebody, all of a sudden we got to kiss their butt when they should be kissing our butt for the job we gave them.
You know?
And the trust we gave them. But no, they've got us afraid of our food, they've got us afraid of our water, they've got us afraid of little microbes that our bodies scoff at if we're healthy.
Yeah.
You know, I was just thinking yesterday, I was, you know, looking for a chin hair. It's one of those things you do when you get older, right?
Oh, don't mention it. Now stop it.
Oh, shush. But I'm looking and I see I've got this little scar on the bottom of my chin. Okay? Little teeny weeny scar. And what's it from? Measles.
Oh.
Okay? Actually, chicken pox.
You're a survivor, are you?
Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing. I can remember when I was in school, if you heard so-and-so got the chicken pox, what did you do? You laughed. And you said, oh, well, it'll be back in a few days with a few spots gone.
Yeah.
You know.
But now.
And nowadays, heavens, your kid gets chicken pox, they're a social pariah. You got to take a vaccine for that. Heavens, it's a deadly disease. Deadly, my butt. These are the things that helped us.
Well, you know, where I mentioned Bill Gates a few minutes ago, he's the one who backs all these vaccination programs as well as birth control programs all over the world, and he is the one who said that these people who are against vaccinating their children should be called terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
So that says it there right in a nutshell,
yep.
You know.
Well, when I was a kid, I got one vaccination. That's it, one.
Well, you're
okay,
lucky.
Shows you how old I am. But I got one vaccination, and it was polio.
Yeah.
And I was lucky because I did not get polio from the shot, but I know somebody who did, and he's married to my cousin. But at any rate, you know, we were all basically raised to be healthy, and we were raised with healthier attitudes about ourselves, about sex, about family, about everything. And now all of that is gone, and we're now living in fear to the point where by the age of about 6, our kids have had about 60 vaccinations.
Yeah.
For things that they'll never catch.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, they take the vaccination, in which case, you know, up pops the disease, and they say, oh, well, we need more shots for that. Vaccine theory has never been proven to be correct.
That's right.
Never. Never, ever, ever has it been proven to be correct, and never, ever, ever has a vaccine actually eradicated anything. And then if they do eradicate something or nature eradicates something, they'll go and reinvent it in a lab and release it.
That's for sure.
And they now have this, what is it, H9, H7, or H something. I can't even keep track of them anymore.
Oh, you're kidding. They're up that high, are they?
Oh, yeah. But now they're saying, well, this was invented here, and this was invented there, and it's released over here, and we're waiting for cases over there. And I'm, oh, my God, here we go again.
Yeah.
And it's, you have, you know, in the States, you have the right to bear arms. No, it's, you have the right to bear your arm.
Yeah.
Because now we're going to put a shot in it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, there's so many points I could pick up on and go with there towards what you're saying.
Oh, we could go on for days on that one.
I could come back and say, as far as the oil topic again and the pipelines and whatnot, the Yukon premier is negotiating to ship oil out through there. I think there is oil there, too, and that they're meeting this week with members of the Canada-China Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, yes. This is under the FIPA again.
Which is not the same as the Canada-China Business Council. Now, the CCCC was formed last year. They're based out of Toronto, and all the members are Chinese people who are basically, they're here to, I don't have the article in front of me, but it's about seeing that their rights that their rights are respected.
Exactly.
And that plays into our favorite topic.
Well, you know, it used to be that your rights were protected, but they were Canadian rights while in Canada, not Chinese rights while they're in Canada.
Well, yeah, well, that's what it is, and I wanted to mention that. And they're meeting, the Yukon Premier is meeting members of this group this week in Calgary to discuss the Northwest Territories oil.
Uh-huh.
And getting it out. So
uh-huh.
One way or the other, they're planning to get all this oil out, and we both know that the trends, the economic trends of continual development now being sustained by perpetual warfare, it can't go on. Or how much longer could it possibly continue?
Oh, it can't. It can't. Not before it explodes. I mean, it's just going to explode one day. And, you know, we're looking at timing on banks. People are asking me, when should I take my money out of the bank? And this and that. And I'm like, well, you know, take it out whenever you find a hole in your mattress. Take it out. Because the interest they're paying you on your accounts, unless they're huge, is peanuts. And you may as well protect it while you can. But then my concern is, well, what if the money's not worth anything?
Well, that's another thing. Some of my ancestors that came from Russia following the Russian Revolution, they came with suitcases full of money that by the time they got there, the money was worthless, completely worthless. But let me tell you, a capitalist generally has the skills to do the same thing over again.
Yeah, it's called buying short and selling long and all that kind of stuff. They're making bets. This is basically, it's the world's biggest casino.
Pretty much.
Is what it's all about. They're betting on things, and they're just making money on the backs of poor people everywhere you turn. And to my mind, I mean, I look back, having been raised a Christian, so to speak, I looked at stories. Now, bear in mind, I walked away from that crap when I was about 12, having seen the inconsistencies and how one thing couldn't stand next to the other without one of them being untrue. You know, I mean, I was smart enough when I was 12 to spot that stuff. And, you know, I was raised basically a Christian, so I knew the story of Jesus overturning the money tables at the temple on the Sabbath. And, you know, I could swallow at the time that it wasn't such a good thing to be doing business on the Sabbath. It was kind of disrespectful, so to speak. But there was more to it than that. And this is what they don't tell. And, of course, it's what the Christian church has not told people that has separated it and separated their people from the truth for all these years and created fear of our Creator. How can you fear your own parent?
Yeah.
Why should you fear your own parent? You shouldn't. So they've taken all of the parental qualities of the Creator away from the Creator by labeling this and labeling that and putting this dictum and that dictum out and making people go away from the truth. The bottom line was Jesus overturned those money tables because these guys were making money off money. They were taking a symbol and making money off it. They were charging interest.
Oh, this is called usury.
Yes, it's called usury.
We're in trouble now for talking about this. Watch
yeah, right. Out. Well, I mean, go pick on Einstein, guys, because he's the one who said, when they asked him, what's the most evil thing on the planet, his answer, without a moment's hesitation, was compound interest.
Well, I'd be more concerned about Weinstein than Einstein.
I don't think the W made that much of a difference. But, you know, notwithstanding, you know, essentially what you're looking at here is you're looking at an entire system based on fraud. An entire system. But it's the devil that we know. That's the problem. It's the devil that we know.
Yeah,
and so when you start talking to people about it, what do they say to you? Oh, well, you can't do anything about that. My own daughter, who is a securities lawyer in Paris, France, a securities lawyer, and I'm trying to protect my own kids, And my darling daughter says to me, "Oh, Mom, that's just the way it is."
Yeah, yeah.
I go, what?
I've heard that one quite a few times.
How can, I'm going, you just swore an oath to the Crown Temple of England, and you can say, "Oh, Mom, that's just the way it is"?
Yeah, with
how can you do that?
That?
You know, and of course, we ask for it, don't we?
Yeah.
We ask for it because of our own ignorance, which is willful blindness on a lot of our parts. And that goes back to what you said earlier. Nobody wants to admit they're wrong.
Well, yes, this is true. But there's the other thing, you know, you're saying about we want to be able to trust somebody. We
want
there
to
be a parent that we can trust and that those social institutions can be trusted.
Yep.
We want that, and that's a basic human urge that, you know, is very real. But
yeah, we want trust and love. We want trust and love from each other, but we don't do anything to get it. In fact, everything that we're doing these days is doing something against it. You know, we're having to, I mean, if a poor woman marries a rich man, what does he do? He has her sign a contract. Why does he do that? You know? Why does he do that? Well, because he doesn't trust the woman he so-called loves. You know? Where's the trust? Where's the trust gone? We don't have that anymore. It's taken away from us. It is now, oh, well, you're marrying so-and-so. You better get a prenup. So society intrudes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, intrudes all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, again, that Hegelian dialectic, it's got to be this way or it's that way, and no in between, is, again, that middle ground is wiped out, and the ability to think is wiped out with it. And the responsibility to think is wiped out with it.
That's one big one there.
That's a huge one.
Responsibility to think, responsibility to analyze and to gather your facts and to make informed decisions on so many fronts in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. So what have we got now? Well, we've got kids that are basically owned by the state. And, you know, we who grew up pointing fingers at the communists in Russia who took kids away from their families at an early, early age to have them perfected by the state, we used to point fingers at that and say, well, that's not right. Really? Then what are you doing allowing the state to tell you what to jam into your baby's arm when they're newborn, giving them a vaccine against a sexually transmitted disease,
that's
Hep B?
That's just one aspect of it, the vaccination. The other part is the psychiatric drugs.
Oh, yeah, the psych drugs, I mean...
Chemical straitjacket.
They're, not only are they a chemical straitjacket, they're also a chemical lobotomy because it is proven that these drugs over the course of time actually destroy brain cells.
Yeah.
In the frontal cortex. And in the frontal cortex, that's where your brain makes all its decisions. And so we are literally becoming addicted to the simplicity that is presented us by the Hegelian dialectic. Because we can't think.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's all go along to get along. It has become the collective. The group is more important than the individual, and yet the individual is what makes up the group.
Yeah.
And how can you not take care of the individual and yet claim to be taking care of the group? They're inseparable. You can't have a group without individuals grouped together. So if you fail to take care of the group, it's going to get smaller, isn't it? Because people will just die. Well, when you look at Agenda 21, that's exactly what they want. You look at the Georgia Guidestones, that's exactly what they want. You look at what they're doing, it's obvious that's what they want. Why would you subject an entire world population to foods that are going to kill them?
Because you want them to die.
Hello. Yeah.
That's what I keep saying. People, you know, people come and talk about these different things, and they're so troubled, and... Well, they're asking, this is when they're asking why, but they're not asking why intellectually. They're asking why emotionally, like, why is this happening?
Yeah.
And when you follow the words to their logical conclusion, that's what it is. They're trying to kill us. And then it all makes sense.
Yep, then it all makes sense. Once you realize there's actually a motive there and that there's actually a group of people on this planet who actually think that they are superior and different from the rest of us.
And deserving.
And then while they're at it, what do? They celebrate multiculturalism, and multiculturalism celebrates differences, not common ground. So, of course, you can't build community on differences. You have to build it on sameness. So everywhere we turn, we find ourselves being emotionally disconnected from everything that we ever had any meaning for. We are disconnected from it, and we are given more and more direction from these powers that be. And if they can't push us in one spot immediately, they will lead us there over the course of a century. And nobody has the wherewithal to think that they would actually be that patient. But the agenda has been in place for hundreds of years.
And
the methodologies are thousands of years old.
They are indeed.
Thousands of years old. I mean, these are, if you ask politicians where do they get this strategy or that strategy, very often it'll come from Art of War.
Oh, yeah. We
know you're talking about a Chinese general from thousands of years ago.
Yeah, same thing.
And now his work is being used by all these modern-day generals, and the only difference between them and him is the technology.
Yeah. And we need to make the distinction of how domestic policy is a case of psychological warfare, so that for us in North America, Turtle Island, the society that's been set up here, to keep us on the domestic front under control, they use less overt violence, but it is still a warfare strategy on our minds. And, you know, people argue about the ways to resist, whether you choose violence or nonviolence, but the whole point is to resist.
Yeah.
Why does a black man shuffle his feet?
Mm-hmm.
He's biding time. And if he walks slower, he's resisting.
Yeah.
If that's the only thing he can do at a given moment is walk slower.
Yeah.
So that it takes longer for his labor to be used. Gives him time to be alive and to try and think of a strategy that will work. And I think this really has the corporate entities scuttling here in particular, because this is so much their base, but the people, the original people of Turtle Island, instead of being assimilated and disappearing, although many of us are very broken down and some of us are assimilated, our numbers are increasing, and the ties to the land cannot be severed. And I don't know if I'll be around in 20 years from now, but I think it'll be pretty interesting.
Oh, it's getting to that point, isn't it? I mean, when they came out with that old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times, we are all cursed right
and
now.
And I don't know if you noticed, but December 2012 came and went, and the world did not end.
No, it didn't. No, it didn't. In fact, nothing in the world actually ended. So even symbolically, what was it the end of? Well, it was the end of the papacy, because I'm reading today that the Pope actually resigned secretly last year, according to prophecies.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That from 60 years prior, that he would resign in the year 2012, that the Pope at the time would resign in 2012. And, of course, when 2012 came and went, a lot of people were saying, oh, well, that makes the prophecy full of it, right? Just like the Mayan prophecy of the end of the world. Or that was the translation, anyway.
Yeah, because that's not what the meaning was. That's not what the teaching was. And they always like to blame us for everything, but no, it was distorted.
Of
course
it was.
Nobody said it wasn't the end of the world, but it certainly was a big change. And,
yep.
And in the beginning, it's the beginning of a big change, and
uh-huh.
We are experiencing a lot of change. Everybody is feeling, you know, that quickening again, which we talked about before, and it's still going on. But we forgot about the end of the world, December 2012, and that's good.
Yeah, well, it's sort of like Y2K. It came and it went, and we're still breathing. But, you know, I'm finding it really fascinating. This time to be alive is really fascinating because you've got so many dichotomies going on. You've got the population is split between those who are hopeless and looking at, you know, with fear at everything that's going on. Then you've got another part of the population that is completely oblivious. You know, it's really, really interesting to see how people are being wakened up. And I've been saying for a very long time now that, you know, a lot of people are not going to wake up for those reasons that we discussed earlier, that you know, it's easier to go along, to get along, than it is to admit you're wrong and actually learn a whole new mindset. It's much easier. So people are lazy because they're stressed. They're stressed out by their own lives. They're stressed out by the world. They're stressed out by their own financial concerns. And then they hear about all this other stuff, and they go, oh, I can't listen to that. I can't listen to that. And they shut it down.
Well, maybe they would. Their minds would be freed by a little catastrophe and chaos in their lives instead of this torture of organizations.
Yeah, well, you know what? I have seen, in the limited exposure I've had to catastrophe of any kind of grand scale in my life, the times that I have seen where there was a major problem going on are those times when I saw the best of everybody around me.
Yep.
I saw the best of them coming out. Because at that point in time, they were up against it. It was like a choice between, do I protect my money or my family?
Well, even
you know,
in a simple situation like when the hydro goes out.
Exactly.
Now, this would have to be prior to wireless technology, but when the hydro goes out, everything stops, and people actually sit down and talk to each other.
Yep. You should have seen when we had that, remember when we had that 3 or 4 day power outage because of the outage down south of the border in, where was it, Pennsylvania or wherever?
The one in Ohio where the squirrel fried the wires in August of, I think, 2003 or something like that?
Oh, whenever it was. It was fascinating because it happened in the middle of the afternoon, like late afternoon. And I was in my house and, you know, I had my computer on and I was doing email and this and that. And then all of a sudden, absolute silence, no hum. No, nothing, no vibrations going on. The fridge went silent. Everything went silent. And I went outside to see, is it my house? Of course, the first thing you want to know is this, like, did I flip a breaker or what?
Yeah.
So you go outside. Well, as I went outside, what did I see?
Everybody doing the same thing.
Everybody on my street doing exactly the same thing and starting to mill around and ask each other questions and talk about this, that, and the other thing. Everybody had the same concern. So all of a sudden, you find yourself talking to people that you ordinarily wouldn't give the time of day to.
Yep.
So out comes the good behavior. Well, if you don't have a barbecue, you can use ours.
Yeah.
You know, get yourself a warm meal. And, oh, I have a water cooler. Do you have any water? You know? Making sure that everybody around you that you all of a sudden care about is taken care of.
Well, we had 13 days of power outage during the ice storm of January 1998.
Oh, that Montreal ice storm that froze everybody.
I guess you could call it that. We're a little far from Montreal, but we had it. 45 minutes farther in your direction, though they didn't. Some of my relatives didn't even realize how badly we were hit until we showed up about a week later and said, geez, do you think we could take a shower here?
Yeah.
And they said, why? What do you want to come over to my house and take a shower for? Well, we haven't had a week.
Yeah, and because it's winter and the water's cold.
Yeah. So.
And the pipes are frozen, and.
You better believe it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's real interesting, though, that, you know, you put people in that situation. You see, you look back in earlier parts of this past century, and you look back at, you know, how things were in the 1800s and the early 20th century, and what you see is you have people without conveniences, and when they are without conveniences, their lives are made better by their community.
Yeah.
And, of course, what have they done over the last 100 years? All this technology has come out, and everything that has come out technologically has divorced us from all of our human interaction. We've now got more online dating relationships than we have regular ones. We now have people walking around oblivious to what's going on around them on the street because they're stuck to an iPad or an iPhone.
Please,
or they've got something stuck in their ear.
Yeah.
And they're watching these little screens. I mean, you people, you're missing your lives.
You're missing your lives. But the other thing there, you're talking about fear a minute ago, and the fear is so inflamed by the powerless feelings that we have in relation to our survival.
Exactly.
So
I mean,
when you've
got a
wood stove, you've got a wood, your house is heated with wood, you burn the wood, you get the wood. I mean, there's still always issues with anything you burn, but you have the access to get the wood to burn in your stove, so when the hydro goes out, your house is still warm. So when this happened, Ice Storm 98, a lot of people, their lives were not that shaken. And the same thing if it had happened 60 years before or 100 years before, then there would be more people self-sufficient. They would have food on hand, they would have their home heated, and the transportation, they wouldn't be so worried about, you know, having to get gas to go all these places and everything. So when you are powerless in your lifestyle, it's easy to make you scared because you know you should be scared.
Yep. And yet, you know, people should know. They're, all these people who are glued to the Internet, says she talking on a radio station glued to the Internet. When people are glued to the Internet, they should also know that the Internet is the greatest source of information since the Library of Alexandria.
Yeah, well, that's
And
insane.
Since that information is there, while they have the power, while they have the access, which isn't guaranteed to any of us at any time.
That's right.
Use the time productively and say, okay, I know how to make a stove out of a pizza box. And some tin foil. Okay? How many people know how to make an oven out of a pizza box with some tin foil? Not too many. How many people know how to make a dome home out of sapling trees, lime, and cement? Not too many. But you can do it in a day. You can do it in a day with enough help. You can create anything you need. If you simply take the initiative and go and find out how, because it's there. All that information is there. All these survival techniques, all these little tricks of the trade, they're all there.
Indeed.
And all we've got to do is go look for them. But while we are dumbed down and scared, what do? We depend on our technology and we pray. And we're always looking for, I mean, I look at the Christians and I laugh. They're looking for, you know, the second coming of Christ is going to fix it all. And I'm going, excuse me, but the Creator has been yelling at all of us for all the time that we've existed as human beings, human thinking beings, supposedly, on this planet, to take responsibility. Right? And yet, here's all this Christian faith going, oh, the second coming of Christ, he's going to come and fix everything. Really?
Yeah, and that's where we don't do anything. We're just waiting to be saved, and that's the mentality.
Yep. We have to trust somebody to come and save us. Somebody's going to come and help us. We don't need to help ourselves. And it puts me in mind of the old joke. I don't know if you've heard this one. But it's about a guy who is stuck on the roof of his house, okay, after a flood. And he's sitting there on the roof of his house, and he's way out there, and he's, you know, he's got no way off the roof. And he prays to God, and he says, God, get me out of this mess, and I promise I'll, you know, I'll behave from now on in my life, right? And so in the back of his head, he's hearing the voice of God, he thinks, saying, don't worry, it'll be all right, right? And along comes a guy on a raft and says, hey, you want to come on my raft? I can take you to safety. Don't worry about it, I'm fine. God's going to take care of me, I'm fine. So he lets the raft go by, and he stays there. And along comes a guy in a canoe, and he says, well, you want to come with me? I can take you to safety. Oh, don't worry about me. I'm fine. God's going to take care of me. And then, of course, there was the helicopter and the motorboat and everything that he passed on, right? And then eventually the guy drowns, and he goes up to the gate of heaven and sees St. Peter, and he says, God promised to save me. Why didn't he save me? And St. Peter says, oh, you mean you didn't notice the raft and the canoe and the motorboat and the helicopter? You didn't notice those things?
Oh, boy. I have heard that one before.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's essentially what we're doing. We're not taking responsibility.
Yeah.
I mean, the Creator does provide us with all of the means and everything that we need on this planet to live and to thrive.
Oh, absolutely. It's all been given to us. If we want to ask for more, we can, but we don't really have to. We just need to look around and see that the tools are there for our survival, and we need to strengthen our alliances. And in order to do that, we have to build trust and care about each other and care for each other, because that's a real stumbling block, especially for people who live the way that we live. We live in the cities, we live in this highly technological society, and people get very isolated, and they think they're independent because they have their machines, but as soon as the machines stop, then we realize how much we need each other.
Exactly. I mean, we don't know how to take care of animals, we don't know how to raise them for food, we don't know how to hunt, we don't know how to make clothing out of leather, how to make leather out of animal hides. We don't know any of this technology. It's all been lost because somebody came along with a better mousetrap and we bought into it. It's all been our laziness and our convenience. The word convenience makes me laugh.
Yeah, that's a
because,
twisted term.
Well, yeah, it has a flip side. It's called inconvenience.
Mm-hmm.
And you're inconvenienced by all your conveniences because you lose all the skills that you had, right? I mean, when we were kids growing up, everybody on my block knew how to fix a car,
mm-hmm.
right? Everybody on my block could do minor repairs around their house. Now I see homeowners and car owners standing in front of their vehicles and their houses, scratching their heads, going, where's the Yellow Pages?
Well, some of that is built in, though, because now, like with cars, you have to hook them up to a computer to do a lot of things.
Well, yeah, this is it. And they're basically, they've done that. You see, it's the devil in the details. Now, I can recall my late husband worked for Ford, okay? Now, he was a senior scheduler. And that meant that the orders would come in from the dealerships, and what he would do is he would set all these orders up on computer, right?
Okay.
And these were, of course, this was in the days before the internet, but they did have computer systems. You're talking in the 80s and things, and he would build it on these machines, and then they didn't have them connected back then. They would have to print them out. And then they would fax them, right? But he would make all the orders. Now, of course, when you get hired internally at Ford, they want you to be loyal to the company. So they treat you really well at the outset. They take you on a trip to Detroit.
Oh.
Yeah, oh, yeah, they take you to Detroit. All expenses paid. You go flying down to Detroit in your first class all the way. And then they show you the Ford Museum. Now, the Ford Museum is, of course, very fascinating to just about anybody who's interested in automobiles, because it goes way back to, you know, old cars, even like vehicles that were created even before Henry made the Model T and the Model A.
Okay.
And he came back from his little trip, And he said to me, he said, you know what? He said, they took us through the museum, and then they took us through another part of the museum. I said, well, what was in that part? He said, the part of the museum they took the employees through, the new employees, was never open to the public. And what was in there? He says, you wouldn't believe the number of engines that don't run on fossil fuels that they have had since the 40s and which they have kept under wraps all this time. And we're talking 40 years later, because this was in the 80s, okay?
Right, right.
And we're talking like 40 years later, these engines are still under wraps. Why? Well, because they threatened the oil and gas cartel.
Yeah.
And now we've got a manufacturer of a car that runs on electricity. It's called the Zen. Rick Mercer did a show on it.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. And he's on YouTube with it. If you want to go up to Rick Mercer and Google or search for Rick Mercer, and or RMR for the Rick Mercer Report, because that's where it was shown, and the Zen car, Z-E-N-N, the Zen car. You're talking about a car that you literally plug into any wall outlet, doesn't need a special outlet like the electric cars that they have now that need special gas stations and special this and special plugs and all that. No, you plug it in like a toaster.
What about the battery that's in it?
It's they didn't discuss what kind it was, but I'm assuming it was probably a lithium type battery. But at any rate, the bottom line was that they had extended the range. They've got the size up to a compact car. They showed how they could put, and this is Rick Mercer, of course, 20 cases of beer and a great big box of Kellogg's Corn Flakes went in the back of that car. 20 cases of beer. So you're talking lots of cargo room, lots of passenger room, lots of speed, lots of range, and it's electric. And guess what? Rick Mercer asked them, what does the Ministry of Transport say about this vehicle? Oh, they won't come and see it. What does the Minister of the Environment say about this vehicle? Oh, nothing. They won't come and see it. So you have, in this country, a vehicle that could environmentally save an awful lot of misery, and our government won't look at it. Why? Why is it they won't look at it?
Do you really want an answer?
No.
These are rhetorical questions.
Yeah, I mean, you know, come on here.
Think about it, people.
Yeah, think about it. Why would they not want that happening? Why would they not? Well, simple. They're not in control of the money. These guys are, they're not coming out of it, and they're not part of the agenda. So if it's not part of the agenda, it's just not going to happen. Plain and simple. And so these guys are trying, and that's not the first time I've heard of this. There's a company called True North Power out of Sky, Ontario, which is just north of Kitchener. And they came out with a combination of wind and solar, portable wind and solar units, literally that could, in an emergency, power a whole town on some gear that fits in a small little U-Haul-type trailer, a two-wheel trailer, and could be set up in under 20 minutes. Ask this guy, how much investment has our government put into something like that? Answer, zero. Why is that? Then you look at, why is Canada not signing on to all the environmental accords? Simple answer. Enbridge. Exxon. It's oil. It's tar sands. Now we've got a great big spill down in Arkansas, and they've declared a no-fly zone over the spill.
Too late. It's been filmed.
Yeah, too late. People are sneaking in there, and they're getting the pictures out, and it's not pretty. And again, they're not shipping crude. They're shipping tar sands oil, which is bitumen. It's tar. It's tar. And this stuff is now ruined for God knows how long, a great big expanse of Arkansas wetland, farmland, hinterland. It's ruined. and it will not be cleaned up for ages and ages. Ask the people who watched the cleanup from the Exxon Valdez, ask them if the cleanup is still going on. And it is.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at our government is ignoring these things. Why? Well, the answer is a simple answer, money. Money, power, and control. And it doesn't matter, and this goes back to prove what you said earlier about it's not even the money. They've got all the money. They don't need the money. They want the power. Okay, it goes back to that. Because in essence, you know, the money's not real anyway. What is real is the control.
Well, maybe that's where people stop have to thinking in terms of our government.
This is exactly where we have to start thinking. We have to start looking at it as the government is the supposed to be the extension arm of the people.
It's not, though. It's the tool of the elitist.
Well, yeah. I mean, wag the dog. Hello, woof woof.
But that's,
you know,
part
they
of
are
how
the
that,
tail.
That's how that power is held over people. Is that they're so deluded?
Exactly.
You know? It's that, I can think of a lot of different sayings, but it's about thinking and thinking things through, and then we get to the bullshit baffles brains and brilliance. What's the one? Brilliance dazzles.
Well, whatever.
Like yeah, it's snow them under, you know, just snow everybody under. And
oh, yeah. Gobbledygook and baffle gab.
Yeah.
You know, so, it's like, I can talk with more technical terms than you, therefore you don't know as much.
Oh, geez, have we ever run into that one?
Oh, you think?
So it's still a struggle, but don't lie down and give up. You know, you just have to get back up again. And
well, if you don't get back up again, what do? You die.
You lie down and die.
Yeah, so what? Are we all suicidal? Are we all that stupid or what?
No, we're not. We're not.
I don't think we are.
No.
So, you know, I'm looking at, you know, I opened the show with that bank thing and I, you know, coming back to it and we're just about to close the show. But the bottom line there is that people need to think and they need to look at what is the truth and what is really going on in order to understand whether or not there is a threat. Nobody's climbing the pine tree.
Yeah.
You know, and those of us who do, basically, oh, look at that jerk up in that damn tree. Oh, no, we're not serving a purpose at all.
Well,
no. We're just up here for our health.
There's a three-step process when you're trying to sound an alarm. Warn people. At first they ignore you, and then they laugh at you, and then they get real mad.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, there are the people who along that process realize that what you're saying is true.
Uh-huh.
And so it builds.
Goes back,
you know,
to Schopenhauer, doesn't it? First, all truth is ridiculed, then it's violently opposed, and then it's accepted as though it was always there.
As though it was always there.
Yep.
And so we're moving along. And it's fun. It's a lot of fun, and it's important to reach out, and then you find that there are people who do think the way you do, and it's not that hopeless. And hopefully that somebody listening today feels encouraged to try a little harder in their own life, in their own spheres. Quite often our children and our grandchildren are our inspiration, that we have to keep on going because we brought them into this world and we have to continue to protect their future because that's our future too.
Yeah. Do you remember the old expression? I always hated it because it really is racist. But you remember the old expression, Indian giver?
Yeah, we never forget that one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my dad used that a lot. I mean, he didn't think of it as a racist term. He just used it, right? And that's how a lot of things get established in our society. We don't really think of the impact of the words. We just use them for facility's sake. And he used that phrase a lot when I was a kid, don't be an Indian giver, meaning don't give it to somebody and take it back. But this is what we are all being, notwithstanding the egregious racism aspect of that phrase. That's what we did. We gave our kids a world. We gave them life. We gave them a world. Do we not bear responsibility for keeping it in a usable state for them?
I would think that's a big part of the responsibility.
I would think so. I mean, you give yourself, you give your kid a car, okay? Don't you want it to be running and in safe condition? You know, we'll give a car that consideration, but not our country. You know, we will give certain things that consideration, stuff that we think we own. We will give it that consideration, taking care of it, but we won't give it to our own country.
Well, that's the difference between what we value and what we take for granted.
Exactly. And we have to stop taking things for granted, because right now, everything that we have grown up thinking is our birthright is now being taken away from us, and taken away from us quickly, right under our noses. And it is people like you
and
hopefully
you.
Me and a whole bunch more people. And, you know, we're always grateful to BBS Radio for letting us do this kind of thing. But the bottom line here is we all have to wake up and start realizing that without each other, we are doomed. We are doomed. We have to stand together, and we have to stand for what's right, and we have to do it now, because if we don't, we are in deep, dark doo-doo. Now, we have about 2 minutes before we hit the end of this show. You believe it?
Yeah, that's been pretty amazing, for sure.
Yeah, well, you see, here you go. She's Keto was saying
never
to me
mind.
At this. Yeah, I know. Well, I don't know. Maybe I can only do an hour. I don't know how long I can talk about this two-headed snake, which, by the way, must be killed
in order to be eradicated. Yes, that's part of the story.
That's part of the story. But before we go, I want people to know, A, where can they access more of your stuff?
Well, they can just send me an email, Kito, K-I-T-T-O-H, at storm.ca. Just write to me, and then they can get on to the newsletter.
The Eagle Watch newsletter, and I highly recommend people, because, oh, man, if you think that Indigenous issues are just Indigenous, you would be way off the mark.
Oh, we deal with all world affairs.
This is the thing.
World affairs.
Yeah, they all the issues are human issues, and we're all human, and we're all brothers and sisters, and we have to start thinking that way. We have to start thinking of each other, not just ourselves. And you, thankfully, are one of those people who is a great reminder of that, and you are the person who climbs the pine tree on a daily basis and picks needles out of your ass on a daily basis, too. But, you know, that being said, my dear, it is the end of the show. Again, email Kito, K-I-T-T-O-H, at Kito at Storm, S-T-O-R-M, like thunderstorm, at storm.ca. Get on that Eagle Watch newsletter list. Read it and stay in touch, people. We will be back in 2 weeks with more news and views and hopefully a little help for the world at hand. And so for now, I bid you all a good night, and we'll see you soon. And in the meantime, God bless from Zero Point at bbsradio.com. Thanks, and have a great weekend.